We're listening to the familiar opening of the Piano Concerto No. 2 by Dmitri Shostakovich. Well, it's familiar to some of us. Those of us, maybe all four of us, who have seen Fantasia 2000, it was used in that one. So,
was it good?
It wasn't as good as the original, but it's worth watching. It's
okay.
Fun.
All right. Well, as long as there's classical music in it.
It's all classical music. It's good. All good stuff.
Did they have Stokowski in there?
I don't remember. But there's Gershwin.
Oh.
So, definitely. Oh, the voices you're hearing, aside from mine, belong to Gregory Voigt, a music director and conductor of the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra, and Catherine Chee, who will be playing this piece with the symphony tonight at 7:30 at the Mark C. Smith Concert Hall. Welcome back to Huntsville, Catherine.
Thank you. I'm really pleased to be here. Thank you.
We were waiting on Gregory to come in and having a lively discussion about places to eat in Huntsville.
Oh, I'm really drooling right now. Yeah. I just want this interview to go.
I'll see what I can do. We were talking off the air about, I mean, I know this piece not only from the Fantasia, but from other, you know, it's familiar to me. But Gregory was saying this is the first time the symphony has played it?
As far as I know, it's definitely the first time I conduct it. It's so strange that some pieces are not on the radar or like, you know, not core repertoire, that's one thing. But also, I think it probably depends on one soloist or conductor picking it up and kind of making it, you know, hip or fashionable or make other people want to do it. But somehow this second piano concerto is not played that often.
I play it on the radio because it's light and it's perky and it's fun and it's 20 minutes and it fits within my hour. So now the last time Catherine was here, you played Bartok.
Bartok first.
A pretty fierce piano concerto.
Oh my gosh, Gregory. that was really, really nerve-wracking. But yeah, no, that's slightly different this time. Yeah. Thank you.
Do you prepare differently as an artist?
No.
Okay.
No, it's always stressful.
Mm-hmm.
And especially because this is a new piece, the confession comes out. It was, but yeah, no, it's basically the same kind of work, you know, trying to get it up to snuff for an orchestra performance. But Bartok was particularly complex. Yeah. This is a little bit more straightforward. I mean, it's more classically sort of written.
No, I mean, I'm really glad that I am discovering this piece for myself because I never knew that Shostakovich could be this pop. Like it's almost like the second movement is like a pop tune.
It's like Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know any other piece by Shostakovich that is like this
beautiful and tender.
Beautiful and very romantic and traditional in a way. So there's because the first piano concerto is also kind of lighthearted, but it's very sarcastic. And this piece is somehow it's different in that regard.
There's definitely sarcasm, though, don't you think? Still, like, I mean, he still has a kind of an edge, but he softens it up quite a bit.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, but especially the second movement. The second movement only has strings, strings accompaniment with the piano, and I just keep waiting for like, okay, when is he gonna go Shostakovich on us? And then he doesn't, and it's like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Well, did you know that he wrote it for his son's 19th birthday? So he wrote it for a 19-year-old to play. So maybe that's
obviously there's a certain kind of tenderness you can feel that for Maxime, who supposedly performed it for his graduation
from the conservatory.
From the conservatory, yeah. So
let's listen to a little bit of that second movement.
Thank you.
the tender second movement of the Shostakovich Piano Concerto No. 2, and Gregory was just saying it's sort of a Rachmaninoff feel to it.
Yeah, the textures and the melodies, and Kathy just said that it's a little bit like Prokofiev, Romeo and Juliet, which is also coming from that tradition, kind of like the romantic sound of Russian music, versus the Shostakovich as we know him, right? Mm-hmm. With this very strong and powerful, but not sweet at all. Music in general, but this is something else. It is very private, I think, as we're listening to it.
Yeah.
Shostakovich wrote that the work had, quote, no redeeming artistic merits.
I think he was being sarcastic there.
I think so. Yeah.
And I think that was his bit of sarcasm.
Well, it could be that he had come under criticism before, and maybe he was just trying to deflect criticism.
I think he was trying to preempt everybody before. Yeah, for sure. But definitely is a charming piece.
The middle movement, I mean the second movement, yeah, the middle movement is slow and tender, but it has a nice sparkly, crackly end to it as well. So the concert begins with this lively Shostakovich, and then we move on to Prokofiev.
No, it's the other way around.
It
we
is?
Start with the Prokofiev Symphony.
Well, okay, we'll start with the Prokofiev Symphony and move on, please.
You want me to flip the order?
Yes, please.
Well, Prokofiev Classical Symphony, which is, you know, it's a short one. It's about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And actually, there is one of the movements is from Cinderella, the Gavotte movement.
Mm-hmm.
He used it in his ballet Cinderella.
Which is very short.
Which is very short. Okay. And also, it is a perfect piece to open a concert.
Mm.
It's sparkly and it's happy and it's... It has quite a bit of sarcasm in it as well, I think, especially like this, you know... kind of like quotation mark classical
mm-hmm.
symphony.
Haydn-esque.
And it's much more difficult than Haydn. And it's, you know, as fun and light it sounds, it is actually a big challenge for any orchestra. It's so virtuoso.
I love this piece. It's so light and perky and happy sounding, but Gregory was saying that it's not that easy.
The way it's written, it's kind of tricky. You know, it sounds like a Haydn, but it's not written like a Haydn, and that is the challenge for you know us to play it. It's like how to make it sound light and happy, yet do everything that the composer wrote in his score.
Something I found interesting, when he was writing the score, he was on vacation and he was trying to get away.
That's
from
why it's
the
like
piano.
Lighthearted. Yeah. sounds like a vacation piece.
But he was on vacation, but he decided that he was going to get away from the piano in composition because he thought that the orchestral colors would be clearer and cleaner. Where would he come up with what did the piano ever do to him?
Well, that's interesting. Well, because composers who play the piano really well, like he did. And by the way, I just listened to a recording with Shostakovich playing Piano Concerto No. 2. I think there is always a question mark, even with players like Rachmaninoff himself, who was a great piano player, or Bartók, who was a great piano player. But the way we play their pieces now, it's not necessarily the same as the way the composer played it, which sounds very strange because, like, in other genre, you're like, oh yeah, well, that's how Miles Davis plays it, right? Like, I would never like touch it or change it because exactly the way he plays it is part of the composition. But in this case, like Bartók played his own pieces a whole lot more like it was a Liszt composition or something like that. So it's kind of back in time, you know, back to the future thing a little bit. And it's the same with Shostakovich playing his own piano concerto. There's not much happening in it. I mean, he could play the piano, but he was not really a concert pianist, right?
Yeah, but I mean, but somebody like, for example, Rachmaninoff playing the piano, then that was sort of on a pedestal of its own, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, Prokofiev and Shostakovich were even more so. Shostakovich was less of a performer for sure. Yeah.
So I think that's what he's talking about. Is like. Trying to compose something just on the paper with the imagination and not being pianistic when you're writing a piece, which I mean, it's, you know, it's a curse and it's a blessing at the same time, because if you're a virtuoso pianist, you can just kind of play something and then write it down. But then again, it's going to sound like a piano piece orchestrated in a way. Uh-huh. So that's probably what as a composer, Prokofiev is talking about here.
We were talking about YouTube. Did you ever watch YouTube videos of classic pianists and emulate them, Kathy? Or do you get ideas or inspiration from them?
Emulate who?
Anybody.
Oh. Well, I mean, if you get those old recordings, I mean, you don't actually see them. I mean, it's mostly just hearing. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot to sort of take in. I mean, of course, we don't. And I think sort of the way people play today is, of course, sort of moved past it in a certain way. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, these classical sort of recordings of Rachmaninoff or even Prokofiev, I mean, very, very stylistic and sort of has its own sort of language. And not per se to say that is what would come out today. Yeah, in I don't know. I'm not making sense.
But, no,
yeah,
you
but
are.
You know what I mean?
It's you just are sort making of, sense. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's sort of...
Well, technique evolves.
Yeah. And I think also, I think musical styles evolve even past, you know, sort of the time when it was written. I mean, of course, there's sort of like the retro, like musical sort of historical performances. Mm-hmm. But I think
is also a contemporary art form because we made it up, right?
Right.
Because there are
exactly.
no recordings. It's
exactly.
only you cannot just read a letter and play it that way because a letter is not going to tell you. You only get like a partial information of a part of what it is, right? But here, when we have recordings, I find it very interesting that we do have historical recordings. Yet the style, the accepted style of playing has changed in the past 50 years or so.
Thank you.
I had to play that because it's very short.
And that's all that matters.
That's right.
In radio.
It's a minute and a half gavotte from the Symphony No. 1, the Classical Symphony. And Prokofiev called that piece himself. He came up with that name himself. It didn't get the name afterwards, like Beethoven's Emperor Concerto. That he named it that. And Tchaikovsky did not have a name for his Symphony No. 5 other than Symphony No. 5. He was sort of not in a happy place. Of course, when was Tchaikovsky in a happy place?
When was Shostakovich in a happy place? Maybe when he wrote the second movement of this concerto, maybe he was. But I don't know. Tchaikovsky and symphonies are a problem, I think. Because, well, to me, it's definitely a challenge because you can hear it every year here, right? Nutcracker you know, other ballets. I mean, he was really in his best form when he was writing pieces that were 3 or 4 minutes long, because you can dance longer than that, right? So he wrote great character pieces. That's why I like his suites for orchestra, for example. But here there was always the pressure of writing a symphony. It has to be symphonic, and for symphonic music you need development, and it has to be serious and big. And you kind of hear that struggle, I think, with all his symphonies, but definitely the later ones. Mm-hmm. It poses a challenge how to make that believable, how to make that honest without putting too much of that struggle on the audience, I think.
Yeah, Tchaikovsky had composed a variety of other symphonic works, but it had been 10 years since he finished his 4th symphony. And he said in a letter, he says, "I'm dreadfully anxious to prove not only to others, but also to myself, that I am not yet played out as a composer."
Wow. And then he wrote 6, of course, which is probably where he found himself as a true symphonic composer, and number 6 has 5 movements, so he was actually not shy to experiment as well. But here, I mean, he was always great at writing great melodies and great characters, and I think in this symphony he managed to actually find the right length for the materials that he came up with. And of course, it's an audience favorite. I mean, you know, Tchaikovsky is Tchaikovsky is Tchaikovsky.
Yeah.
And there is a reason for that. I mean, it's just amazing that all those inventions that he comes up with, and the melodies just really just take you on a trip.
Kathy was just saying off the air, this is a nice program because you have the sparkly Shostakovich and the Prokofiev, but still an air of seriousness. And then we get to Tchaikovsky contemplating great things in his great Tchaikovsky mind. So I've read...
Say that again.
Yeah. No.
I think I'm going to write it down and quote you in his great Tchaikovsky mind.
Well, I found this quote from a Soviet writer that Tchaikovsky was supposedly exploring the theme of fate in this thing. If you want to assign meaning or a theme to it, it's fate. And a Soviet writer said that if Beethoven's 5th is fate knocking at the door, Tchaikovsky's 5th is fate trying to get out.
Oh, these Soviets were so funny. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'm trying not to hang any, you know, programs on a music where... the intention of the composer is clearly not to do that. Like Prokofiev clearly stated, this is a classical symphony, and by saying that, he put his own composition on the map immediately. People listen to it that way. Okay, this is a reflection, or like neoclassical. This is playful, and so on. Mm-hmm. But Tchaikovsky did not name this he named it Symphony Number 5,
right,
like
that,
it's the fifth symphony.
Uh-huh.
So I think that the materials, the musical materials, and the way they work out, you know, against one another, or at the end, the way it becomes a symphony is the story of the piece.
Mm-hmm. I was just reading an interview, actually it was a diary excerpt from the living composer, Nico Muhly. His opera, Marnie, is about to premiere. And he was talking about working as a composer. He says, the primary task, I feel, is to create a piece of art that is better than the same amount of silence.
One more time?
Here.
I think I understood the words. It's just, I just need to, the music is better
yeah,
than...
Yeah, listening to the music is better than listening. 10 minutes of music is better than 10 minutes of silence. He said, I would prefer to sit silently thinking for 10 minutes than to listen to certain pieces of music, and therefore feel it's my duty as a composer to occupy the time with the listener and the musicians with something challenging, engaging, and emotionally alluring.
Well, Nico invented composition in this sentence, I think.
Uh-huh.
Nobody before him came up with that idea. Sorry, I'm being sarcastic. I think I know what you're saying. I don't know. There's a lot of different ways to look at it. Like, you know, John Cage said, everything is music that you listen to as music, like mm-hmm. even Silence, the famous, you know, mm-hmm. Piece where no musical note written. It's really... And that's what's so fascinating about live concerts is that the audience is just as important as the performance,
right.
performers, because this dynamic between audience and performers makes a concert and the piece too.
Right, and even though I've done all this nerdy research and read liner notes and watched YouTube videos, I still come into the concert hall with an open mind and just ready to experience what's happening on the stage and what I feel around me.
And the fantastic thing about it is that you're sitting there with, and I don't know, 1,500 other people, and you're experiencing the same thing, but if I ask you what your personal experience was, they'll be completely different from what another person will say.
Mm-hmm.
So music is this medium that kind of draws you in and draws things out of you as far as your own experiences and memories and your connection you remember feelings. You remember
mm-hmm,
your
mm-hmm.
own feelings. Music makes you remember how you felt whenever and regarding to whatever, and sometimes it's very unexpected, actually. So, yeah.
I mean, I have this like really weird sort of cross section that just came through. But basically, I mean, isn't supposedly silence supposed to be as important as the music? And I mean, and I remember this one famous pianist, I believe it was Schnabel, who said, I think he basically said, I play the silences better than everyone else. I mean, other people can play the notes, you know, better than me, but I play the silences better. But I mean, it's sort of this coexistence. I mean, you can't have one without the other, and somehow the way it passes through time is the sort of the cumulative.
And with the music, you can make people listen to the silence. I think that's very important. It's because you frame the silence with music, and when, you know, we say or I say that let the music breathe, you know, and an instrument, not just wind instrument or singers where you actually breathe,
mm-hmm.
but for strings and for piano players and for percussion players, it's very important to if you want to play like a really musical phrase, that you need to breathe with the music you're playing. And so music in general breathes when the pacing for the silence is right. It's like the way you arrive to a moment of silence, how much you wait before the next musical action. And again, Kate said that the question is not what sound comes next. The real question is like when it comes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think timing and pacing is crucial. And that's how you actually connect silence and music together.
Well, it will not be silent in the concert hall Friday evening at 7:30, the Mark C. Smith Concert Hall, the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra playing Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony, along with the Piano Concerto No. 2 of Shostakovich and the lovely, delightful, sparkly Classical Symphony of Prokofiev. That's at 7:30, and you'll be doing a pre-concert lecture.
That is correct.
And will Kathy be there, too?
I sure hope so.
Yeah,
before
yeah.
the concert.
Is
are
there
you
a carrot?
Me?
Are you going to bring out a carrot for me?
A carrot?
A carrot.
That's a first. Nobody ever asked for a carrot for the pre-concert talk, but I think we can manage it. We have great carrots in Alabama here.
If it's organic, it's better.
Literally, I have carrots in my purse.
You're busted.
What's next for the Huntsville Symphony? Symphony.
Next for the Huntsville Symphony is our first casual classics of the season, which is a dinner concert on Sunday early evening, and it's sold out. So I'm only saying that so I can say it's sold out.
Well, they have carrots.
I don't know. I don't exactly know what's being served as far as the food goes, but we are serving Stravinsky Octet for Winds and Mendelssohn Octet for Strings. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever been to one of these, it's actually going to be at the Carriage House at the Botanical Garden. We serve food, and then we play a movement, and then we serve food, and then we play another movement. So, and I talk about the pieces, so it really is a casual classics show. But of course, with the food and culinary, you know, experience and music, they often go together, and it's one of my favorite events of the season, actually. And then we have a Pops concert coming up. We Salute, celebrating our veterans on November 9th.
Yeah, Jolie is conducting. Yeah,
Jolie is conducting, and it's just a great program and a great mix of pop music and some beautiful music called Letters of Love and War. So I really encourage you to attend our first Pops concert, and there's a second Pops concert of the year. Is going to be conducted by me on the 31st of December, which is our
New Year's Eve
orchestra concert. And it's all about movies, movies and TV music. And you know, we always say this, so don't worry about your party, because you come to the concert and you're out of there in, you know, 2 hours, and you can still go and enjoy New Year's Eve parties around town.
You can find more information about all of the concerts at hso.org. The number to call is 256-539-4818. Gregory Voida and Catherine Chee, it's been fun. Are you coming back anytime soon? Please do.
I would love to. It's wonderful being here.